Yeah, check it out. Y'all want to win a free vacation to the jungles of Costa Rica this summer and help support the Scott Horton Show? You can. Joshua Hughes, peace activist and permaculturalist, runs Verde Energia Pacifica, an intentional community in the mountains of Llanos de Periscal, Costa Rica, and he's offered to raffle off a week's stay to listeners of this show. Airfare is on you, but transportation to and from the airport, as well as a 7-day stay for you and a guest in your own private house with 3 meals a day, is covered. You can learn and practice some skills, or just go for a swim in their river, pool, or waterfall, walk jungle trails, enjoy the views, do yoga or dance in the studio, make art, play music, check out a local soccer game, or simply relax in a hammock by the river and read. Raffle tickets are just $50. Stop by scotthorton.org/raffle for details. And anyone who enters will get half off on any future stay down there. scotthorton.org/raffle. All right. Welcome back to the show, guys. It's the Scott Horton Show. I'm him. ScottHorton.org for the archives. Here on the Liberty Radio Network, live from noon to 2 Eastern Time. LRN.FM, LibertyRadioNetwork.com. And our guest today is Shay Machine Riley. He writes at ConvergentInterests.Liberty.me. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hey, how you doing, Scott? Pleasure.
I'm doing real good. Good to have you on the show. We've been talking on the Twitter for a little while here, and you had kind of sketched out a little bit of this argument to me before by tweet. And now you've written up this great article here. It's called, and we ran it over the weekend at antiwar.com. It's called The Ugly Truth About ISIS, A New Era of Global Terrorism. And it sounds like what you're saying is all my warnings are coming true about how, well, you start out saying, hey, look, the super duper majority, that's not your words, that's mine. No doubt about it, the vast, vast majority, 90-something percent of the terrorism cases in the United States, terror plots in the United States, since September 11th, were created by the FBI, conceived with the FBI in the first place. But you're saying, that looks to be no longer the case. We're actually at a point where they have created all the enough monsters to go ahead and fulfill the role without having to entrap them. Is that right?
Well, I don't want to. I want to be clear. The FBI are still up to their old gimmicks. There are plenty of cases that you see in the past couple of months where it fits the MO of the FBI's entrapment methodology pretty well. But if you look at some of the latest cases, or even if you look at some of the more successful terrorist attacks in the United States and in Europe, more actually in Europe than in the United States, you start to see that there's a new MO for these terrorists. And a lot of times it looks like they were legitimately radicalized, or maybe not radicalized, maybe that's not a good word, but they were legitimately influenced and impacted by the ISIS propaganda machine.
And now, so ever since 2011 and the start of America and its allies' support for the Mujahideen war over there, you know, one of the things I've been saying on the show, of course, and my brilliant guests who I plagiarize to have been saying is, hey, this is going to blow back. This isn't like the Afghan war, which blew back plenty bad in the 1980s. We're talking thousands of miles west. We're talking, you know, direct access to the Levant, to the Mediterranean Sea, to Europe, or almost just Turkey standing in the way now. And I guess Turkey's got most of the fighters flowing the other direction. But still, we're talking a whole new generation. If Iraq War II wasn't bad enough, another new generation of jihadists brought up, raised up by American foreign policy here in the Obama years, and that it's just a matter of time before they start blowing up targets. In obviously Europe is easier to get to than America, but probably both. And we saw a little more than a year ago, there was the guy that shot up the, I forget, it was a synagogue and like with an attached Jewish museum in Brussels, something like that. And he was a guy who had been to Syria and then and fought with ISIS. And apparently the same thing for the Charlie Hebdo attack. Now you're talking about they don't even need that. All they need is Facebook.
Well, yeah. And, you know, Scott, you know, you talk about the 1980s and the way that foreign policy kind of blew back up in her face. The difference here is the internet. You know, we particularly libertarians really like to sing the praises of all the internet's given us. But, you know, Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, that was a Rolodex. You know, that was a bunch of guys who knew each other way back when, who were kind of halfway communicating via landlines. But you open up the internet and you open up a whole world of disillusioned youth and a lot of times deluded youth who really don't know what they're looking for or how they're going to find it. And they stumble across these hate sites the same way we have in the U.S. And they get radicalized. And the thing is, ISIS may not be doing the radicalization, but what it's doing is it's a hashtag. And it's giving people direction. It's giving people something to look for when they go online. Mm. And it's developing an entire network all over the world.
Well, and it's preaching in its own twisted way what they claim basically is purity, right? This is the kind of thing that young men are attracted to, is something to believe in. And so, yeah, wow. And then now they don't even have to get a ticket to Turkey, which they don't know how to get to Turkey anyway. They don't know where Turkey is. But they don't need to. And it's just as easy. And I think we've gotten off really lucky as far as having more than a dozen and perhaps even two dozen. And again, I think this is along the lines you're talking about, not entrapped by the FBI and fooled into doing this, but legitimately recruited. And I'm talking about Somali Americans who have come from Minnesota and have gone to Somalia to fight with Al-Shabaab. It doesn't take a genius to figure out that they could stay here and fight for Al-Shabaab. And, you know, attack the Mall of America or whatever economic target in Minnesota without, you know, all they got to do is buy a rifle and go down the street and hit a soft target. I'm not trying to advise anybody to do that, but I'm just saying this is our government. It's sort of like the Mark Stevens thing, putting the ambassador in the middle of a hornet's nest. Well, here, we brought our hornet's nest here.
And right.
Yeah, to our own land.
And you know, I don't want to say luckily for us because it's none of it's a good thing, but right now, ISIS recruitment propaganda is definitely more geared towards getting people to come over there. And they, that's why they have it. That's why they need it, because they want to grow their state, and they want to entice as many young people from all around the world who would be fooled by an ideology like that to support it. But to support it over there where they can go bleed for ISIS.
Yeah.
I don't see them doing a lot, saying a lot of things like, hey, go out and attack American targets, go out and attack the military or the president. But what you do see, and this is the important point that I tried to stress in my article, is that ISIS is definitely advocating the use of physical violence against non-believers all over the world. And they advocate it specifically in France and in Britain and in the U.S. And they advocate it as a form of retaliation. Now, the point that I tried to make in my article is that one of the other unintended consequences of the war on terror is it's completely marginalized the Muslim population in the United States. I mean, everybody knows, you, as a white man, when I walk into a convenience store and I see someone who looks like he's from Middle Eastern descent standing behind the counter, it's just a product of the times that I have to, you know, kind of take a breath and, you know, try and rationalize my way out of the situation, you know, out of the feeling that I get that, you know, he's going to try and attack me. And I'm not saying that everyone is like that, but what I am saying is that the vast majority of Americans see Muslims in that light. And that's because George Bush got in front of the American people and he said the reason that they attacked us is because they're Muslims.
Right. Yeah, because their Muslim religion makes them hate things that are innocent and good and true and free. So, boy. We better take it to them then, because what are we going to do? Give up virtue?
Right. And so what you have is you have a bunch of, you know, red-blooded Americans going out there and you know, with different forms of hate crimes. You know, one thing that's really interesting, I didn't bring it up in the article, but if you look at the hate crimes that are the Muslim population endures on a year-to-year basis, mm-hmm. vastly outnumbers the amount of hate crimes that any other ethnic group in the country endures in terms of proportion to the size of the population.
Right.
You know, and I listed a few examples in the article, but when you have a situation where, you know, Muslim Americans don't feel welcome here, they don't feel at home here, and then their kids are growing up in these schools and they're being made fun of and all this. And I mean, what do you expect them to do? We need to stop. We need to stop this, and we need to get some sanity back into the country.
All right. Now, so there's a lot to follow up on here. We're about to have to take this break. First of all, I think I kind of fell down on the job of making you prove this, you know, very extreme assertion of yours that there are any plots at all that aren't FBI jobs. That sounds crazy. So I'll have you give us some examples when we get back, and then we'll talk. Well, lots of follow-ups coming up. It's Shay Machine Riley. Check out his blog, convergentinterests.liberty.me, for the new era of global terrorism. Back after this. Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org. All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. Talking with Shay Machine Riley about this article at convergentinterests.liberty.me. Convergentinterests.liberty.me. The article is The Ugly Truth About ISIS, A New Era of Global Terrorism. And so now we got to rewind it to the beginning here. I didn't really set this up very well. Everybody knows I've interviewed Trevor Aronson about this. I wish I'd written the book about it. I was going to write one like this about all the bogus terrorism cases and the FBI running around and trapping every idiot into saying he loves Osama and this kind of thing. There are very few exceptions to this that I know of. There's Azazi from Denver. There's the Times Square bomber, the Underpants bomber, Fort Hood, and I think I'm out. Maybe there are one or two more than that. But now what you're arguing here is that this has changed where, yeah, as you said, the FBI, they're still up to their games. Oh, I left out Boston, of course. They're still up to their games in trapping idiots and all of that. But now they don't necessarily need to, because we have recent examples here of people just going ahead and going along with their recruiters on Facebook and Twitter and this kind of thing. Can you give us some examples to illustrate what you're talking about there?
Well, sure, Scott. I want to start with what got me interested in the whole topic of discussion, which is a Charlie Hebdo attack, or not the Charlie Hebdo, Garland, Texas attacks?
Pamela Geller.
Yeah, a few days after those attacks happened, Mitch Prothero over at McClatchy News wrote an article where he cited J.M. Berger talking about how this is going to be the end of the world and all the lone wolves are going to come out of the woodwork and start killing everybody. And I immediately responded the way that anyone who's been paying attention to this would be likely to respond. I said, this is crazy. I don't know why this is even headline news. The kid was a loon. He wasn't ISIS. ISIS didn't plot this or anything like that. And I got into a big Twitter argument with Mitchell Prothero about it. You can go look at the argument. Google Shay Machine and Berger's a hack, and it'll come right up there. So I started paying attention to what was going on. You know, the first thing I did was I went to see what the tweets from the ISIS sympathizers in Texas really said, and they're pretty explicit. It makes a lot of sense that they were maybe not potentially motivated by ISIS, but certainly connected to them in a way where they were declaring themselves to, you know, whatever it is that ISIS stands for in the virtual world openly before they committed the attack. And then I started looking at all these terrorist attacks that keep on coming up. And I think the main difference between the attacks that are just obviously bogus and the ones that you got to take a harder look at are what it is that the FBI is accusing these guys of doing. And the attacks, most recently the ones in New York, not the attacks, the cases of terrorist sympathy, most recently the one in New York and a few months earlier the one in Florida, the difference is they're going there. They're plotting to go there. They're plotting to join ISIS. And that's a marked difference from the type of story that we get from the FBI cases where they say, yeah, they're planning on chopping off a bunch of heads and they're doing it for ISIS. That doesn't make any sense. But when you hear that these guys wanted to go to Syria, and you connect the fact that the people who committed the attack in Garland, the people in Ottawa, the guy in Ottawa who shot the state house there, they were all trying to go overseas. They wanted to join the fight. Now, the one in New York, the most recent one, the guy who was just arrested a couple of weeks ago, Alaa Sadeh, the FBI was tipped off on this guy by his roommate. And it seems as though, based on the way that the evidence is coming out, that he was already online connected to, in this particular case, he was connected to some jihadi website where they were talking about, you know, his sympathy for ISIS, posting comments on YouTube under ISIS videos, proclaiming them, you know, God's soldiers and things of that nature.
Which, by the way, these guys want to go over there to Syria to be used up as suicide bombers by the Chechens or whatever. Go right ahead. I think it's crazy to try to stop them. They ought to be put on the first plane over there and then, you know, searched thoroughly first and then, you know, told that they're guilty of treason and can't come back unless they want to go to the Supermax for the rest of their life. Now that they've decided to join up with ISIS, they're exiled and pass a law. You know, it shouldn't be arbitrary, but if that's what they want to do, fine. Why keep them here? Like you said, the guy in Ottawa, all he wanted to do was go blow himself up far away from here somewhere. Hell.
Right, yeah.
I want to see, you know, Iraqi Shia suicide bombed, but hell, better than in my neighborhood.
Well, and that's the thing, right? So the this guy, Alaa Sadeh, he had taken someone to the airport a few weeks before they got him. And I think they got him and his friend Samuel Topaz en route to get their tickets.
You know what, though? One of these guys a couple of years ago was prosecuted for trying to go and join up with, I don't know if it was al-Nusra or if it was already ISIS by then, but his defense was, and his father said, it was the CIA that recruited him, or at least he believed that it was the CIA that recruited him to go to fight against Assad. And so what do you mean he's in trouble?
Yeah, I would be, I'm very interested to see the details of those cases. It's an interesting idea that maybe we've come so far that we're going to start pretending that we're the feds just so that we can entrap people into doing the wrong thing. It's pretty absurd. I don't think that we're there yet. I don't think that it's not necessarily coming.
Yeah.
But,
all right, now,
yeah, I mean,
oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, and then the other group, the guys in Florida that I mentioned earlier from a couple months ago, these guys are all from the steppes. They're all from the caucuses. They all came here legally. One of them ended up overstaying his visa. But again, the FBI was tipped off by these guys from their activity on noted, in this case, an Uzbek website that was sympathizing ISIS. And their entire operation was set up after the fact. And another thing that you see with these cases is the ones that are legit are really open about what they're doing. I want to kill Obama and I want to go overseas and I want to do all this. We plotted it. I was going to go to Syria to fight in the jihad. They're saying it. They're open about it. They're clear. And it makes a lot of sense. If you kind of consider how far we've come, particularly with the way that social media works and the way that, I mean, we've already seen it. Look at ISIS in Syria and in Iraq. They're full of foreign fighters from all over the world. But most particularly, you see Abdelmajed Abdelbari, the British rapper who is the suspect of the Brits, I think. He was a British rapper who supposedly was the one who beheaded James Foley. Just a few months after ISIS sacked Mosul and became, you know, in the spotlight, you had Douglas MacArthur McCain. I don't know if you remember him. He was the first American, quote, the American to die for ISIS. He ended up dying in Syria a month after the fall of Mosul. And, the thing is.
Go ahead.
So the thing is, I don't know. I don't know how much of these guys are being radicalized by the message or how much of them are just, you know.
Right. Hang out for another segment, okay?
Yeah, I got you.
All right, great. It's Shea Machine Riley. He's at convergentinterests.liberty.me. We're going to talk more about this problem, the new problem, fighting him over there and creating a problem over here because of it. Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our status enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. Sorry, I'm never clear on the way out to break, am I? Not new. We've had terrorist attacks in the United States before. What I meant was it's kind of the next wave, the next phase of America's terror war. Hey, wait a minute. The new era of global terrorism. That's the title of the article. I should have just gone with that. It's at convergentinterests.liberty.me. Shea Machine Riley, The Ugly Truth About ISIS, A New Era of Global Terrorism. And we're talking about how apparently you have more and more people, not like the numbers they would try to imply on CNN or something like that, but still, who are being recruited to go and join the Islamic State. And now mostly, as our guest is explaining, they seem to want to go over there and fight. Well, that's good, I guess, until the propaganda on Twitter changes and they're told to hit targets closer to home. And I gotta say, I think we've been really lucky up until this point that mostly all we've had to deal with is a bunch of bogus FBI entrapment cases. Other than, you know, the failure of, Zazi at the New York, Times Square there in 2010 and, some of these other things. But it seems like, you know, matters could have been a lot worse. You don't need a whole lot of Al-Qaeda guys or Al-Qaeda loyal guys to do some damage. And, but now, you know, you keep this same policy up for 15 years running. And, you know, what surprise is it that now the Middle East is entirely in chaos and that people who marginally could be convinced to identify with the other side are beginning to do so now? But I wanted to get to what you were saying about the way Muslims are treated in the United States, because, you know, this is something that Phil Giraldi has written about a lot in the past, about how in Europe, Muslim populations are much more marginalized. They're much more analogous to Mexicans or Central American immigrants in the United States, where they tend to be, on average, poorer and live kind of in separate neighborhoods and that kind of thing, are treated more like second-class citizens, where in America, Muslims are much more likely to be upper class or upper middle class and own property and seek advanced degrees and work as professionals, like the Times Square bomber, in fact. And they're the kind of people who are much less likely to be so alienated from the society that they would wage war against it. It really has put the lie to all the propaganda, all the anti-Islamic propaganda over all these years about just how dangerous they are, when there are somewhere on the order of 3 or 5 million American Muslims who are clearly not at war with this country whatsoever. We're talking about the very outside margin here. The fact it's the exception proves the rule kind of thing, I think. And yet at the same time, I'm not really contradicting you or arguing the point that more and more they must feel more and more alienated. Especially, you know, as Anthony Gregory put it years ago, I'm sorry I'm going on so long, I'll turn it over to you in a second, but as Anthony put it years ago, that George W. Bush used to keep the lid on all of this because he was the right-wing leader, alpha male up there, and he would say, it's not Islam. These guys are perverting Islam. They're a fringe group. They're the Manson family of Muslims, man. They're these terrible crazies, and yeah, we got to get them, but no, they don't represent Islam. But once Bush was gone, that was like the lid off the pot, and it just started boiling over. And especially with a black pseudo-Muslim president and everything for their right to rally against, and it just bled all over the place to, you know, Muslims, you know, on your street corner kind of thing. But anyway, I just wonder what you think of that as far as the relative alienation of American Muslims and how much worse you think it's getting and that kind of thing.
Well, I think it's a very important point that you make. You know, a lot of times these kids who are radicalized, they're delusional, they don't really understand where their place is in the world. They're kids who are coming from bad backgrounds. This isn't any different for the ISIS terrorists than it is for the gangbangers on the street or the white supremacists. They mostly come from a high level of it is going to be socioeconomic. A lot of it is going to come from, you know, adverse childhood experiences. It doesn't really matter. And I think what's saving us is the relative peace and prosperity that American Muslims have, because they're mostly immigrants who come here to work and make a living for themselves and get up into the middle class. But these immigrants have children, and these children have to grow up in American schools, and they see what they see on TV every day. And if they're practicing Muslims, they, you know that they're identifying with it. You know, they're identifying with all the people. Now, a point that I make in my article is we just had the Dylann Roof shooting a couple weeks ago. But 3 months ago, there were three, as far as I'm concerned, completely innocent Muslim American students who were gunned down. And really, the media stopped talking about it after a couple of days. We see stuff like this all the time. We had a guy in Texas got shot just a month after that. A kid in Kansas got run down. He was leaving his mosque and he got run down in a car, just murdered, cold blood. And that's the last that we've ever heard about it. Maybe they got the killer, maybe they didn't, but Muslim Americans don't see that. They don't, there isn't the same type of outrage, for Muslim Americans that we see, in terms of the Dylann Roof shooting.
Yeah. Now, well, and we have an example right in front of us about how people feel when they're marginalized like that, and the entire Black Lives Matter campaign, that Black Americans still this day feel like they have to insist that I am a man, right? Like the signs back in the days of the Martin Luther King marches. And so that, that's the same kind of thing, right? Where, people, they don't even, right now that's the big news story. But most of the time, just another black guy shot by the cops doesn't even make the local news,
Right. Right. And so, the thing is, when these kids grow up and they experience this and they're trying to find themselves and they're products of our public school system and they go online and they find this recruitment propaganda, it's very easy to get sucked into it, no matter who you are, if this is the type of background you're coming from. Yeah. And so that's probably what we're going to start seeing, as far as I can guess. But we certainly don't see the same type of attitude, even from the left, towards Muslim Americans that we do towards the blacks. Because, think about it. We have legislatures that are passing anti-Muslim legislation in this country, and it doesn't even get a peep.
Right.
And the problem with us is people who kind of see this stuff, we tend to kind of see it and want to make light of it. We want to say, well, you know what? There really is no war on terror. It's all a big phony. It's all a big phony ploy by the government to take our liberties and get involved over in the Middle East. And yeah, there's a lot of truth to that. But at the same time, we have this situation in this country. Saying that because the FBI can't do a good job catching terrorists, or they have to make up all their own terror plots in order to, sustain their budgets, that it's a non sequitur to say that there isn't a problem in this country or that there won't be.
Right.
We have to acknowledge that. And really,
I want to make sure that people understand that you're not trying to play into the demonizing Muslims thing here. You're demonizing the foreign policy that puts us at risk of alienating American Muslims so badly that they would side with the other side against us.
That's exactly right. And the arbitrariness of the way that we made ISIS an enemy is probably the most pointed discussion. I mean, what on earth was going on in 2013 and into 2014 when they decided, you know what, these people that we've been backing all this time, we're going to suddenly make them an enemy, when they did nothing different? The only difference was they sacked a city inside a set of imaginary lines that no one was even paying attention to anyway.
Yeah, and I got PR got too bad basically by then.
That's what it was. Either that or they thought that was their end. My opinion at the time, if you would ask me, why on earth we're going after ISIS now after, 3 years of them being around already, I would have said, well, they couldn't get their war in Syria. They couldn't get their war in Syria and they want it back in the Middle East, and that's the way they're going to do it. That was my assessment at the time.
Yeah. Well, it's not like they've really changed their policy since then. It's just kind of in status quo mode, I think. Back real quick, though, to the motive of American, whether they're entrapped by the FBI or whether they're these self-recruited types that you're talking about. It's always about American foreign policy. It's never a matter of, you know, a measure of their devotion to the religion. So, but that's, of course, who you can expect the government to target will be people who are the most religious rather than the people who are most upset. And then even then, there's no necessary correlation whatsoever between those who are very upset about American foreign policy and violence either. But to just pick on, well, who spends more of their day thinking about the Muslim religion or whatever, that those are the ones, the most devout are the ones who are the most suspicious. I mean, that is just a general warrant for outright oppression of, you know, people on a completely arbitrary basis. That's, you know, back where we started. That's the lie that's what this is about. You know, when started because of George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton's foreign policy in the first place.
That's it right there. And that's the key, is that when the 9/11 attacks happened, we blamed it on Muslims. And then we immediately followed up with punishing all Muslims across the world with our raising of Iraq, the occupation of Iraq and Afghanistan, all of the drone strikes all over the world. And if you're a Muslim American and you see this, first they blame all Muslims. Then, you know, you come out and you say, no, this isn't right. This isn't true. But then you see the entire Muslim population all over the world being punished for the behavior of, you know, certain jihadi groups. Well, how could you not identify with that is the way I'm seeing it. Now, I don't know. I'm not susceptible to any of this because I don't identify. But I can imagine that watching, you know, Muslims across the Muslim world being droned to death. And being bombed all over the world to just say, oh, they're attacking the terrorists, or they just don't know, or those are a different kind of Muslim. I can't see that's the way it is.
Well, and then the question is, you know, if somebody does another Boston type attack or worse, then what gets the blame? Obama's inattention and lack of a vigorous enough foreign policy over there, or the fact that he's continued what Bush started this whole time? And that's where, you know, the entire argument in America basically comes down to Rand Paul versus Lindsey Graham. I mean, there's no one else on a level high enough to wage the argument and win it. And I guess he won't. So,
well, that's the problem, because he's not saying the truth. The truth is our foreign policy creates this. And he said it a couple of times, but it's got to be clear. Our foreign policy creates this mess. It creates the way forward for groups like ISIS to be recruiting Muslim populations all over the world. These kids are disenchanted with the West already just by virtue of them being kids. And then they see what's going on in the Middle East and they see it as a symbol. And now all of a sudden they want to get on planes and fly over there. And what really gets me is that that's a problem for us when we have the foreign policy that we do, where we're talking about, you know, the foreign affairs article that you keep bringing up, embracing Al-Qaeda.
Right.
How on earth can we even say with a straight face that we're indicting people on terrorist charges, right, because they're going over to support?
Yeah, like I was saying, that one kid, he said, but it was the CIA that sent me. And as far as we know, that's legit, right? I mean, it could be, right? Hey, that's the worst you could say about that is, hey, that could be true. Maybe we don't know for a fact that it is, but why not?
Well, I mean, it
perfectly
makes more
fits
sense
within
their
agenda, you know?
It makes more sense on the face of it than anything else. I mean, you hear that and you're like, oh, well, that makes.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no wonder he was dumb enough. You know, they must have used MK Ultra Voodoo on him. Nah, I'm just kidding. Hey, we got to go, man. Thanks very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right, y'all. That is Shay Machine Riley. He's writing at convergentinterests.liberty.me. We'll be right back. Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richman, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com.